Hi everyone, welcome to the U Project. That is the name, Craig Harper. Melissa is sitting opposite me. This is a, so no guest tonight, tomorrow night. So we're doing this Monday night. Tomorrow night, Professor Sharon Ricardo from Monash University. She's the head of biomedical science. We're talking all things epigenetics and cellular physiology and anti-aging and fucking awesome stuff. That's tomorrow night. Thursday night, not sure. We'll figure that out. We'll just make something
up. It's a long time between now and Thursday.
People say to me all the time, who have you got on tomorrow? I go, dunno. Got to make some phone calls. You don't want to get too ahead of yourself. So tonight's podcast is, or this episode, today's, whenever you're listening to this, this episode is a byproduct. I guess it's a byproduct of people contacting me or bumping into me and asking me, or, you know, literally years and years of me answering questions for people around professional speaking. How do I get into it? How do you do it? How did you start? How do you prepare for a presentation or a workshop or a program, a corporate thing or a two-day weekend? Or how do you, what's your blueprint? What's your operating system? Do you have a three-step, five-step, 10-step plan, any plan, no plan? How does it work? So obviously in terms of being a professional speaker, so what I'm going to talk about tonight is that potentially perhaps being paid to stand in front of groups and share your thoughts, ideas, philosophy, story, experiences, but also just to give you, for anyone who just wants to build confidence doing public speaking. So it's not, this is not particular or solely focused on becoming a professional speaker, but rather about, you know, how do I get in front of groups? How do I talk and teach and coach and share? And, you know, whether or not that's going to be in front of a few people at work or in front of a footy team at a local footy club, or in some voluntary capacity, or whether or not you aspire to be the next Tony Robbins or Jordan Peterson or Oprah or whoever in front of millions of people. So, and just to give you context, my typical, like, people ask me how I make money. Well, I don't make money through the podcast, really. We have a couple of sponsors, but that money gets absorbed in running things. But how I make money essentially is through speaking. We have a few things, you know, books and so on, but my, as in not the U Project. So the U Project kind of, I don't know how much I should say here, Melissa, but I'll say so. I don't know. I just fucking opened this door and then I thought, should I say? Okay, so we have a premises facility. The U Project pays Melissa. This is our company structure. No one needs to know. And a few other bits and pieces. But essentially my income, Craig Harper, is through speaking. So that's corporate stuff and that's some of the public stuff and so on. So I work with everyone from schools to sporting teams, local, elite. A range of most of my work is in the corporate space in terms of my public speaking. Most of it, my paid public speaking, is in the corporate space. I also work for not-for-profits. Like, for example, last Friday night, I did a gig for Matt Daniels, who was running a fundraiser in Geelong for the Leukemia Foundation. And I gladly do things like that. I love being involved in that. I've done work for government, obviously, because I come from a fitness industry background. I'm often doing stuff for gyms or chains of gyms or even fitness industry conferences. I spoke recently, or not recently, was it in end of last year, was it?
Yeah.
At the Philex Fitness Business Summit. And I recently did Hayden's Fitness Business Summit Australia, which was in Carlton, I think, a couple of weeks. So I do stuff like that. I speak in prisons, and also I spent 3 or 4 years working at an addiction treatment center here in Melbourne. So I've worked with addicts, alcoholics, blokes in prison, elite athletes, general public, corporates, and I guess that most of you know this, but if you're newish to this podcast, the area of focus for me is really about thinking, metacognition, thinking about thinking. Self-management, human performance, human behavior, potential. How do we get more out of ourselves? How do we think better, choose better, do better? What is success for me? What does that look like? What's working in my world? What's not? What needs to change? What part of the solution am I? What part of the problem am I? And so on. And all of these ideas and principles, whether or not it's doing better as a team or doing better in a marriage or doing better as an individual at your academic pursuit or doing better at losing weight or getting healthy or fit or doing better at managing your addiction, a lot of the principles and processes and ideas that work for one work for another. That is, they are transferable. And so where my philosophy came from is, and my ideas and my I guess a lot of stuff that I teach came from working in the fitness industry and working on the gym floor with thousands of people for decades, talking to people about change. So everybody that walks through the door has one thing in common, that is they want to create change. Nobody joins a gym, nobody employs a personal trainer, nobody signs up, nobody goes to a class because they don't want to change. Everybody wants to change in some way, shape or form. So apart from the physiological, which was a big part of obviously my job as a trainer and exercise scientist, a bigger part that I didn't really anticipate going in was that I needed to understand how human beings work on an emotional, sociological, psychological and practical level, not just physiological, so that I could figure out how the fuck do some people get amazing results with not much in terms of potential and talent and even resources, and then other people who seem to have everything going for them chronically underachieve. And then we start to explore things like mindset and willingness to work hard and preparedness to get uncomfortable and so on. So I want to share a little bit tonight about how I prepare for a presentation or a workshop or any kind of corporate gig or I run a two-day program, which is in September this year at Mount Eliza, where literally I am talking most of the time, apart from when we're sleeping, from Friday night at 7 or 8 until Sunday at 3 or 4, and most of the time I am talking. If that's not to the group, it's to individuals, and we have 130 or 40 people, which is about our limit. And, you know, that's how do I get ready for that? And we'll talk about that a little bit as well. So I want to give you before people often ask when, you know, like, for example, when I've got to do an all-day workshop or, you know, not too long ago I did an all-day gig with a real estate company, and I would go into that. The way that that would work is I would talk to whoever it is that's employing me for the day. I would find out where they're at culturally and what's going on in terms of the business and why they want me to come and talk and what are their key challenges and issues. Obviously, I'm not an expert in real estate, but I don't go into a real estate organization to tell them how to run their business from that perspective. Generally, I talk about people stuff in the middle of the business stuff. And my platform for that, or my way of rationalizing why I'm there in most instances is because all businesses are run by humans. Even if it's a tech business, it's still run by humans, and every human's got a personality, ego, attitude, beliefs, values, a body, ideas. And everybody has the potential for peaks and troughs or has peaks and troughs. So whether or not it's a bank, whether or not it's the government, whether or not it's a real estate firm, whether or not it's small company, small team, big organization, my experience is that we're often dealing with the same issues, which are leadership and management and communication and connection. So even if I'm doing something, am I talking too much?
You're meant to be.
Oh, right. Melissa just looked at, I'd just been looking down. I looked up and she's just staring at me like, fucking hell. Sorry.
I was trying to work out where you were going next.
Well, you know, so the truth is, because I have so much experience in this space and so much knowledge around this stuff and so many, had so many conversation and answered so many questions, I will go in with an idea of what I'm going to talk about. But if you've heard me talk, then most of you who have seen me talk in person will know that I don't use video, I don't use PowerPoint presentation, I don't use graphs, I don't use charts. I generally And now I'm not suggesting you do this, by the way, but the way that I work is I try to build a relationship and a rapport and an experience with the crowd, with the audience, with the other humans in the room as I go. So one of my personal, and this takes a bit of time, you know, on the road, so to speak, and experience. But one of my beliefs is that I can't create connection or optimal connection with people if I have a completely scripted, premeditated, pre-choreographed verbal routine that I go and just wheel out. So I'll say, I might have a conversation with somebody and I'll have a conversation, I should say, with the boss or the owner or the leaders or managers or whoever. Say, all right, well, we really need to talk about communication and connection and culture and, you know, conflict resolution and problem solving and, you know, a little bit of motivation and attitude stuff would be great, Craig. And I'm like, cool. So then I will run them through some of the stuff that I might touch on. I'll expand on their points and I'll say, what if I do some of this, blah, 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 blah. And usually this happens over the phone or on a Skype call. I will take notes as I speak to the person I'm liaising with. And then on the day I will turn up knowing kind of where I'm going. I never stand and give a lecture or a presentation per se, but what I do most of the time is I will, from the start, try to create an interactive experience. Now, the moment that I've got a laugh or the moment that I've got a hand raised or the moment that I've got heads nodding or the moment that I've got some kind of verbal exchange or interaction, then I know that I've shifted the energy in the room and I've now created a level of connection that didn't exist 5 minutes or 2 minutes ago. And the moment I've got a little bit of connection, then I've got a little bit of leverage, which means we're starting to create some momentum as a group. Versus somebody who walks up with a preset presentation with 10 slides, 5 points on each slide. Here are my 10 slides. Here are my 5 points on each. That is 50 points. I've got 50 minutes. I need to get through each point in 1 minute. And now that's not the worst thing to do. But for me, if you want to know the truth, it's probably close to the worst thing to do. Why? Because unless it's an academic lecture or presentation where you just need to spew out information, your chances of creating a great experience for people with that kind of model are next to zero. So I kind of suggest when, if you're going to stand up and teach or coach or share, let's say you've got an hour. Let's say, I should have thought this through. I've got a piece of paper and a pen in front of me. So this is what I would do. Let's say you've got an hour. So I would say, come up with 6 key things. Now, again, this is not a blueprint. This is just me thinking as I'm going. And literally what I'm doing with you now, you the listener, is this is how I talk to someone when I'm coaching. So let's pretend you want to do, you listening to this, you want to do a 1 hour kind of presentation in front of a group. And I would say, all right, why don't you do this? Why don't you come up with 6 ideas or 6 theories or philosophies or concepts that you want to talk to your group about, which are under the banner of the topic or subject that you're exploring with them, okay? So 6 ideas. And let's say, for example, the overarching topic is communication. All right, so we're talking about communication. So number one might just be, well, what is communication? Then you can explore that. Is it only words? Is it the interaction? Is it how much physiology is involved? What about the not just whether or not we are speaking articulately, but are we actually speaking a language, in inverted commas, that they understand? So that might be number one. Number two might be, who am I talking to? What's their background? What's their level of understanding? How do I create connection with them? How do I empathize with them? How do I step into their reality? Number three might be whatever and so on. But when we go, all right, well, I know my overarching topic. Now I've got 6 key messages under that banner that I want to share. And I've got, 6 things, 10 minutes, give or take, maybe a bit of intro and outro, but let's say 8 or 9 minutes on each of those with a bit of intro and outro time. So then we would break down each one of those 6 like this. So I would say, for example, so now we've got our one hour, we've got our overall theme, and now we've broken it up into six key things that we want to teach in that hour. Now with each of those six key things, I would break that down further and say, okay, so what's the idea that I want to share, or what's the concept? That's number one. And the concept might be, let me give you an example, getting uncomfortable is actually good for us when it's done the right way. So discomfort is your friend. This is the idea. Two, now I'm going to tell a story about that. I'm going to give you some kind of story about that that you can relate to. So I would maybe talk about somebody who goes to the gym. They never get uncomfortable. They go to the gym, they wear the right clothes, they're there regularly, but they never ever get to a point where they're hurting or working hard or sweating or experience any kind of physical discomfort because they don't want to hurt. So therefore, the benefit isn't there. They look like they're training, but what they're doing essentially is maintaining rather than progressing. And when does our body change? When does it adapt? When does it improve? When does it become in inverted commas better? Is when we get uncomfortable and force it to adapt. So number one is the idea. Number two is a story around the idea. Number three is, well, what are the benefits? And I just explained that. The benefits are, when I get uncomfortable, I have to adapt. When I get uncomfortable, I learn and I grow. And then number four is, how do I apply that? How do I apply that? So what's the idea? Tell me a story. Why do I tell people a story about this thing, this concept? And it might be that communication is the most important interpersonal skill. That's the idea. Now let me tell you a story about that. Boom. And now let me tell you the benefits of being a good communicator. Boom. And then number four, how do I apply that? So that's a little model that I use. And you know, there is no, people often think there's got to be some set protocol or blueprint or 3 or 5 or 10 step plan as to how we do this. And honestly, I've seen absolutely amazing presenters who use video, who use charts, who use graphs, but they do it in a way where it creates interaction and flow. I've seen people who stand up there with absolutely no resources and just weave fucking magic for an hour or 2 hours with people. They don't use a note. They don't look at anything. I've seen highly intelligent, gifted people who are super smart stand up there and be mindlessly fucking boring for an hour where people wanted to walk out and some did. I've seen all of it. I've seen great. I've seen terrible. But what I know really matters in terms of being able to create or deliver something that people will go away from and talk about in a positive way is that we need to be able to create a good experience for people. And I always say to would-be speakers or people who are perhaps in it already, do they enjoy it? Does the audience enjoy it? Is there engagement? Are they paying attention? Are they looking at their phone? What's their physiology telling you? Are they engaged? Are they asking questions? Are they smiling? Are they nodding? Are they laughing? And so on. So it's about, before we get to, of course, we want great content, we want great ideas, we want great stories, we want great messages. But if we've got all of that, but we don't have an ability to be able to create an experience for a room full of people, whether that's 8 people or 800 people, if we can't create that, then it's going to be hard for us to be effective. And the best way to create that is just time on the road. The best way is just to get in front of as many people as you can. People often say to me before they've done one gig, how much should I charge? And I go, zero. Do 100 for free, get some skill, do an apprenticeship, and then don't worry about how much money you're making. Worry about how good you are, or how much skill you're developing, or how people are being impacted. And worry about becoming efficient and effective, and worry about, don't worry, but care more about mastery than about money. Because when you become really, really good at that thing, when you become excellent at being in front of groups, reading audiences, being adaptable, especially once you start to step into that professional space, then the money will come, the gigs will come just because you're good. So obsessing and worrying and prioritizing the money is actually the worst way to go. And yes, that means that you might have to do another gig for a year or two or five. Maybe you'll be a superstar in 6 months. Who knows? Maybe it'll take you 10 years. But, you know, I did my first paid speaking gig about 30 years ago. And I would say it took me a solid decade before I think I was any good. But it won't take you that long, I'm sure, because I'm sure you've got more talent than me and you've definitely got more resources available to you in 2019 than I had. So what I've done is I've given Melissa one of the things that I get asked often when, like, for example, I've got a new workshop coming up in 2 weekends. We hit the Gold Coast on a Sunday. And so how I would prepare for that is, this is what I do. I go, well, last year I did a workshop and the title was, "What the fuck am I doing with my life?" WTF. Melissa couldn't actually write "what the fuck" in the marketing because apparently the robots didn't like it. So we had to use WTF.
Even that they didn't end up liking.
And the reason that I use that is because essentially people ask me that all the time. What the fuck am I doing? Because people arrive at a point where they go, well, now I'm 40, I'm doing these things. I don't like my life. I don't like my job. I don't like where I'm at. Some people love it. Some people don't. But invariably, I have conversations with people who at some stage will say something in the space of what the fuck am I doing? It might be with my body, might be with my money, might be with my career, might be with my relationship. It might be with the totality of my life. But they are conversations that I had. So even when you are coming up with a title for your presentation or your workshop or your program or whatever it is, it's not that we need to have fuck in the title, of course, but what it is, it's we need to come up with a concept, an idea, a title that resonates with people. So for example, when I wrote 20 Questions for Humans, which is sitting about 1 foot away from me, what I do is I try to come up with something. Of course, I want to write a good book with good content. But I know that if I write a great book with amazing, relevant, specific, potentially transformational content, but the title of my book is shit and the look and feel of my book is shit, people are not buying it. People are not picking it up. They're not looking at it. They're not turning it around and reading the back cover. And so, for example, with this book that I'm holding in my hand, I put the 20 questions, which a couple of people advised me not to do. I put the actual 20 questions that we explore in the book on the back cover because I knew that when I say, for example, question one, what's my life telling me? Question two, what are my core values and how do I live in alignment? Question three, why do I self-sabotage? Question eight, why do I think the way that I do? Question 11, what's it like being around me? And so on. I know that these are questions that a lot of people will say to themselves or me, fuck, I want to know that. And then I know they're going to pick up the book, browse through the book, and hopefully buy the book. Of course, there's a level of strategy around that. Hopefully, I'm writing what I believe in. Hopefully, I'm living in alignment and I'm sharing my values and ideas. And so too with a workshop or a presentation, be that, like I said, a corporate gig or a gig in front of, you know, 500 school kids or whatever, we still need to have something that arouses interest and is relevant. Sometimes people will come to me with an idea for a presentation, which is good, and then they'll tell me the title or the topic or the title, and I'll go, yeah, we need to rethink that title because if you put that on your website or you put that in your brochure or you put that in your menu of potential gigs that you can do or talks, presentations that you can offer, people are not going to necessarily go for that. So yes, of course, and I'm talking about from a professional perspective now, but we need to understand what is going to resonate with people. So sharing things that are relevant and meaningful is great, but also those things need to be shared in a way which resonates with most people. So for example, tomorrow night I've got Professor Sharon Ricardo, as I said earlier. Now, one of my challenges with academics, and God bless her, she's amazing, but is to get somebody who's a high-level academic, a professor and an absolute genius into the studio and go, now, Shazza, just remember, we're not talking to academics. We're talking to people like Harps. We're talking to the general public, and they're smart, but we're not all PhDs, right? So lots to, so because she's used to lecturing in an academic capacity, so then the challenge for somebody like her in that moment, in that situation, is to come on to a podcast with a bloke that says fuck a lot and make her messages and ideas user and listener friendly. And this is just a skill that we develop over time. So what, where are we up to in terms of time?
25 minutes.
Okay, I'm going to have a little sip. Hang on. Definitely don't edit that out. So what I've done is I often show people when they say, how do you prepare for, say, oh, I didn't finish what I was going to say. Sorry about the new workshop. So blah, blah, blah. I said, what the fuck? So this year's workshop is called, the National Tour workshop is called A Personal Revolution, which is obvious. Is that what it's called?
I think it's called, yeah.
I think so. I should know. It doesn't.
I should know too.
Yeah.
I think it's called Your Personal Revolution.
Okay. It doesn't matter so much, but it's different. So what is it? Anyway. Can you believe that? Well, we haven't started yet. We haven't done one yet. But what I've been doing is putting together my content. And so what I know is you're going to look it up, aren't you? Yeah, go on.
It's annoying me now.
So what I know is that probably 80% of the people that come to hear me this year haven't heard me before. And I also know that there's a lot of core stuff around success and beliefs and metacognition and execution and goal setting and all of those kind of very normal self-help personal development things that we need to cover. But what I can't do is, go on.
Your Personal Revolution.
Yeah, I thought so. Perfect. I should know the title. But what I can't do is I can't turn up this year and do last year's workshop with a new label. So, and neither do I want to. So I've spent the last couple of months coming up with new content and new ideas and new stories and new ways of connecting and sharing and coaching and hopefully inspiring and empowering to, so that one, people who have been following me for a while have got some new content and some new ideas and some new strategies, but two, so that I'm evolving and I'm developing. And people often say, when you turn up for like a workshop, be a half day or a full day workshop, like what notes do you take with you? How many notes? And the truth is, generally, I would take one sheet. And so I might have one sheet of paper, which I've got such a sheet in front of Melissa, and that might have 80 words on it. And each one of those words is, like, for example, the word might be success, or the word might be purpose, or the word, or it might be a couple of words, it might be time management, or the word might be spirituality. Doesn't matter. But what that is, that's for me in the moment a reminder of, okay, I need to cover this. So I know, for example, I could talk about and around success as an idea, as a construct, as a cerebral construct, as a measurable, practical, tangible thing in sport, in life, as an idea. And I can create conversation around just that one thing. What is success? Is it the same for everyone? Is it different? Is it for the same person through their life, or does it change and evolve? I can talk about that one word on that page for 20, 30, 60 minutes, depending on the situation. So I don't need reams and reams of notes, because the knowledge, I already have the knowledge. It's already locked in there. But what sometimes I need to do is look down and go, oh, yeah, self-management. Yeah, I haven't spoken about self-management. So I'll just tidy this up and then we'll circle back. We've kind of got near it, but we haven't spoken about it directly. All right, so I want you to write down this term, everybody, self-management. What does that mean? When I say that term to you, what? And then all of a sudden we've got engagement. Oh, how I manage my body, how I manage my life, how I manage my decisions, how I manage my time, how I manage my resources, how I manage my physical, emotional, and mental energy, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden we've got a conversation going. So what I've done is I've given Melissa a sheet, one of my sheets, which has got about 80 words or 80 combinations. So sometimes it's two or three words. And I don't know. Can you put it on your computer? I hate it when I can see. Put it. Don't let me see it. I hate. You know, the funny thing is, I'm worse when put it down.
Well, I'm trying not to stop the recording. Oh, okay. That would be bad.
Sorry. Listen to me being bossy.
Yeah, I'll build my own little fort over
you
here.
You build a little fort. No, yeah. I can't see it now. All right, that's good. So Melissa's just going to give me some of the words off, and I'm going to then unpack that a little bit. But what I recommend before we do this is, you know your subject matter really well, and don't just be another person. Don't be essentially a replica of someone else. And if you perchance want to work in the transformation, inspiration, motivation, you know, let's change our life thinking habits. If you want to work in that space, that's great. And I mean that, that's great. However, come up with your philosophy. Come up with your stories. Come up, share your experiences, your insights, your truth, your learning, your understanding. Don't hear somebody else say something and then just wheel that out. And of course, there's going to be overlap and familiarity and enforcement and reinforcement and probably contradiction. That's okay. Just make sure that your stuff is your stuff, because many times I've heard people get up and essentially relay other people's stories or other people's presentations almost word for word. And so it's not coming from any deep cellular, emotional, connected level. It's like almost something, a presentation that they've memorized and then deliver. And when you're essentially wheeling out somebody else's stuff, in inverted commas, it's very hard to have a real connection and a real experience with the audience. All right, so what I want you to do, Melissa Cameron, is just pick any word or thing and I'll give you a minute or two on that.
Sure. So I reckon we're going to start with expectations and disappointment.
Oh, okay. I actually spoke to someone about this today. This is interesting. I spoke to the crab today and I spoke to Johnny, my boy who got blown up in the car accident. So expectation is blessed.
Did you just call him my boy who got blown up?
Yeah, who got blown up in the car accident. Johnny, everyone knows who he is. Oh, no, everyone doesn't, but a man that I've worked with for the last 18 months, he's gone from, hey, John, you're going to be dead, to now he's not dead and he's walking, he's doing great. So he was talking, and I might get in trouble for this, but I don't care. He was talking about him and his good wife, Chen. He was talking about how, you know, sometimes they have moments, and he wasn't, Jen, if you're listening, he loves you so much. He wasn't running you down at all. In fact, he started with, by the way, I really love her. They were probably his first words. Hashtag you owe me, son. And no, but he was just talking about how he gets frustrated with stuff, and part of that is his recovery and his body doesn't work the way he wants it to work. But also, you know, he gets frustrated sometimes because he and Jen are very different, like they love each other. And I was talking about, and I essentially said to him, and this is what that is about, you expect her to think like you. Mm. So you get frustrated. Is it disappointment or frustration, the other word?
Disappointment.
Okay. So you get disappointed and or frustrated because you expect her to understand you or think like you or have your perspective. Mm. And so one of the things, like we think we think that our partner or our child or our boss or our colleague or our employee is the source of our disappointment, right? But really where our disappointment comes from is our expectation that they will respond a certain way or do a certain thing or understand this idea that I'm sharing the way that I understand the idea, and not only understand it, but then run with it and make it their own. So disappointment comes not so much from another person disappointing us, but rather our expectation of how they should be and how they should think and how they should respond to my situation or my words or my expectations of them. The end.
All right.
Next one. Pick another one.
We'll get John out of trouble now. We'll move on to...
Oh, yeah. By the way, Jen, he really loves you. Did I just get him in the shit a little bit?
No, not at all.
Let's tell her not to listen to this one.
All right, the next one is be teachable.
Oh, be teachable. So I always, you know, these are things, each of these things that Melissa's sharing is just things that I'll unpack in a presentation. But I think a lot of us at times, including me, are not so teachable. And we're not so teachable because we have pretty hardwired beliefs around certain things. And some of those hardwired beliefs, it's not just a cognitive thing, I believe X, Y, Z, it's an emotional thing. I believe that Catholics are going to heaven and everyone else isn't. That was the paradigm that I grew up in. And I know that's silly and I don't believe that now. But that is the paradigm that I grew up in. That was what I was taught. That was what I was told. And I was, you know, and when I was growing up in that cognitive and theological and sociological construct, that is, Craig, this is how the world works. We're right, they're wrong, sucked in for everybody else. You're going to heaven, they're not. I know that's silly, but this is literally, you think about theology and religion, is really, it's apart from the other things that it is, it's a cognitive program that people like me grow up in. So your brain, your thinking, your social life, your relationships, the way that you understand and process the world is happening from a baby, from when you're a baby, from when you can walk and talk and think and perceive and understand. And so one of the challenges for us is that now we go, all right, what do I know? Or what do I think? What are my hardwired beliefs? What are my attitudes? What are my opinions around this? And am I open to the possibility that I could be wrong? Because if we are not at least open to the possibility that perhaps we're wrong, then what we're going to do is we're going to live in an echo chamber where we only pay attention to people who say what we say, think what we think, believe what we believe, and do what we do. And so we build our kind of, we build ourselves around an idea, or we build a lot of our reality around this thing called confirmation bias, which is, well, I only listen to people who think like me, believe like me. And therefore, when I live in that, then I'm not open. Therefore, I can't really grow and evolve because I'm closed down to anything that doesn't align with what I believe. So the challenge is for us to go, am I willing to, there's another term on there, unlearning, I think. So being teachable and being willing to unlearn. If you say, you know what, I really want to just be a good human, and this is as fundamental and as silly as that sounds, and I don't even know always what that means, but I just want to be a good human, and I want to be open, and I want to be vulnerable, and I want to be real, and I want to be okay with being wrong. I'm not always okay with it because I've got an ego. I'm not always okay with it because sometimes I'm a dickhead and a smartass. But my intention, Craig Harper, my intention is that I am teachable, that I am vulnerable, that I am willing to unlearn, that I am willing to go, I know I offended you, I didn't mean to offend you, but I understand you're offended, I'm sorry. And so I think that being a great student and being able to really evolve needs to come from a platform of humility and self-awareness that we go, well, am I genuinely, yes, like I know, for example, I am a coach and a teacher and a mentor, but I am at least 51% student. I might be 49% the other stuff, but I'm, you know how much I read, you know how much I study, you know how many conversations I have, you know what I'm about to commence academically.
I was going to say that percentage is about to increase.
Yeah, well, I'm, for those of you who don't know, I'm about to start a PhD in neuroscience. Why? Because there's just, I don't know so much stuff. I don't know so much stuff. And by the way, you know, I don't need to do this. That, like, my career is fine, my brand is fine, the momentum that I have is fine, my business is fine. I don't need, but at the same time, I need to do it.
Yeah.
I need to do it because I, based on who I am and who I want to be and how I want to keep evolving, I want to keep learning. I hope that I die in a fucking lecture somewhere when I'm 101, I just keel over.
Let's not think about that now.
Why not? It's 46 years away. So that is. Being teachable, and it's very important, very important. Yeah. And it takes guts because you know what? Some of us, when we're really, really honest and we really reflect and we get over the ego and the bullshit and you go, you know what? I'm a little bit stubborn with, you know, and there's some things it's fine to be stubborn with because you 100% that's, but there are other things where you go, could I, you know, could I be wrong?
Yeah, something.
Could I be wrong?
Yeah.
Is there a better or a different way? Okay, pick another one.
Okay, we're jumping all over the place here.
This is fun.
But we're going to go with being productive early.
Oh, okay. That is, okay. Well, this is really fundamental. This is not particularly clever or, you know, amazing, but there's lots of research out that I won't, you can do a search if you want or you can just believe me. There's lots of research that tells us from a practical, from a behavioral, from an emotional, from a psychological and from an efficiency and effectiveness point of view, we are better off to get stuff done early. Now, whether or not early for you is midday because you work a night shift, I'm just talking early in your day. But for most of us, that's going to be earlier in the day. So what happens is, apart from the evidence around this and the research around this, I can tell you that the people that I've worked with over the years, anecdotally, almost 100% tell me when they get up and they go from a behavioral and a lifestyle model of I don't exercise, da da da, to now they are exercising in the morning, they are getting shit done in the morning, they are whatever it is that they used to not do, they're now doing that, they're now whatever it is, doing their study, doing their homework, doing their cleaning the house, washing the fucking whatever it is, whoever it is. They just make a point of being more proactive and productive earlier in the day. Almost unequivocally, it sets them up for a better day, not only from the point of view of efficiency and effectiveness, but also emotionally, people are in a better place because they've just got shit done. Whereas when we procrastinate and delay and avoid and put off, actually what we do is build anxiety and apprehension, and then we put ourselves in a worse place. You've got to get it done. Get it done early.
And I think you're right. I mean, it is a really straightforward one, but I think it's something that can make a massive difference.
And I, for sure, I did not invent that. That's just, of course. You know, I didn't invent any of this, by the way.
And I think with that as well is doing the hard thing first. That kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah, when you do the hard thing first, you create a level of internal momentum that you don't when you don't do the hard thing first.
You keep avoiding it. Okay, next. We're going to go with, you've just got the word flow written here, and I think it's quite timely to mention this one, given that you're talking about speaking.
Yeah. So, well, this is a bit fluffy, and some of you will go, maybe you won't.
Maybe flow. Tell them about Melbourne.
So, I mean, flow is, people call flow a state that we get in, a creative state, an internal state that we get into when things, it's just like everything's just going well. Athletes talk about when they're in flow, when it's like they shoot, basketballers, for example, might shoot 20 goals in a row and the hoop looks three times as big and they can't miss. Musicians, creatives get into flow. Flow is kind of a state where time seems to disappear and things that are sometimes difficult or cumbersome emotionally or practically become easy. And so I guess an example for me is because I write a lot, you know, sometimes for me the writing process is very cerebral and deliberately creative and even sometimes frustrating and clunky, where I might have an idea and I want to share this idea and I sit at my computer and I go, all right, I want to write a little post for Facebook, or I want to write a new chapter, or I want to write two paragraphs for this chapter of this book, and I'm talking about resilience and I'll sit down and it just fucking takes forever sometimes to write, you know, two or three paragraphs might take an hour. Now, conversely, there are times when I'm in flow where, and I've said this to people many times, where one, I would write that 1 hour's worth of writing, I would do that in 6 or 7 minutes or as fast as I can type. But for me, when, for example, when I'm writing, when I'm in flow, it's like it almost comes through me, not from me. It's like the word, the ideas, the creative expression, the whatever it is almost happening despite me. And so And you've probably felt that, whether or not it's in sport or whether or not it's in some kind of musical or creative experience or doing something where you just find yourself almost where you're bending time and things seem almost effortless. And so I guess from a performance and a happiness and effectiveness point of view, the challenge is for us to try to find a way back to flow. And so, as Melissa said at the top of this, I was going to tell a fib then. I was going to say, I always do this before a gig. I don't actually always do this. Sometimes to my own detriment, I'll be like, for example, this Wednesday, I've got to go to Trafalgar. Sale. Isn't that Friday?
No, Friday's.
Oh, okay. Trafalgar. I've got to go to Sale. Fucking hell. And that's the nighttime one, is it?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I've got to go do a gig in the country, and then on Friday I've got to do another one, blah, blah, blah. So I will rock up. Generally what will happen is I'll talk to the people. I'll know what I'm talking about. I know who the audience is, and I'll be quite prepared. And generally something like a very practical experience where I'm doing – that's on leadership, isn't it, that particular – yes. So I – And a bit of a no-brainer, but I'll still do some prep and I'll still spend a little bit of quiet time in the car, and I'll look at my notes, or I'll look at my points, or I'll look at the – I record my notes from the phone conversation, and I take a photo of that page. I just scroll out notes while I'm on the phone with the people. Then I screenshot it, put it in favorites. I don't even know if you knew that. And then I'll sit in the car and I'll just go over the notes that I took when I was – just so I'm – you know, because me speaking on leadership is not a stretch, then I'll go in and sometimes I'll do that really well, sometimes not. And then there are other times where I will put in, I might have something significant. Like last year I did, all around Australia, we did our live workshops, but our workshop in Melbourne, which was the What the Fuck Am I Doing With My Life, I had, what are you laughing at?
Just that title.
We had 700 people at Deakin, 700 seats, 700 people. And I was thinking... It was funny because on the way there, I was thinking, you know, the little fat kids evolved and, you know, this is nice. And there was no, was there ego? I don't know. Maybe. I think my overwhelming emotion was gratitude. And I was just really grateful. And I got there and, you know, we all have our little rituals, or we all have our, you know, some of us believe in something, you know, and I kind of sit there and I sat there, I got there about 20 or 30 minutes before I was, you know, speaking, and I don't like to go in too early when it's a big thing because you get caught up with people and you can't, you don't want to be rude, but it also you don't want to be having 37 conversations before you actually get to the door. So I kind of wait as long as I can and then go in there at the last minute. And I sat in the car and I just meditated and I got really still and I thought about what I wanted to do today. And I literally offered up that experience so that my intention going in was that it would be not at all about me or my skill or my ego or my ability, but rather about just creating something that was, or me being, I guess, the conductor of that orchestra for 3 hours, that I would hopefully open the door and that they would come through the door, and that it, I know this sounds fucking fluffy, but this is how I think. And I would hopefully with them create an amazing experience. And I really got myself into a place where I was in a really good place before I started. And I walked in and literally 3 or 4 minutes later, we were underway.
Yeah.
And that day, that particular, and the same guy doing the same kind of gig, you know, decent audience, same kind of academic setting, like a university lecture theatre, not academics though, just the general public. And, you know, something just, it was just an amazing day. It was a really, really good day. And I was literally, and this, you know, I don't know, some of you might go that you're weird. I get it. I don't blame you. But I was literally in flow for 3 hours.
Mm.
And it was like the event was happening around me, not because of me. It was literally like that. And I felt like I was almost a passenger on this amazing fucking thing. And I took no ownership and no credit. Mm. And I'm not being falsely humble. It was just a fucking amazing day. And I was really, I feel like I was privileged to be there because there was something going on in that space, in that place.
The energy in that room.
Yeah. And you know, so for me, that was the world's fucking longest answer. But that is, and so I guess then my question is, one, I need to spend, okay, so I'm putting up my hand because this is the other thing too, as a speaker, I know that I can, this is not the right term, but I can get away with, in inverted commas, just skill and knowledge and experience.
Yep.
But I don't want that. I want more than that. I want to be able to open that door so that, you know, as often as possible, you know, something special is going on in that room so that people go, fuck, this is not because of Craig Harper, but because this is just, there's something going on. And that, like, I want to inspire and teach and coach and educate and prompt and provoke and all of those things. But what I really want is for people to go away from that moment in time and do something transformational.
Yeah.
So that that very small moment in time leads to, not because of me, but because of their choices and subsequent behavior, that that leads to something that becomes truly transformational for them. The end. How long have we been going for?
50 minutes.
Have we?
Yeah. So
I'm enjoying myself. I'm going to have another sip of tea. And my tea's super cold, but I don't care. Let's do maybe a couple more.
All right. So next. Yeah, next I think we're going to go with.
Oh, you're all smirky. What's that?
Well,
it's like you've just seen something new.
Yeah, I just spotted this one.
Okay.
Trying to change people.
Oh.
Because this one comes up a lot at workshops when somebody comes up to you and says, I wish my husband would do this, or why won't my wife do that?
Yeah,
or,
how do I? Well, more often it's how do I make my partner do this? Well, the answer is you don't. So, I mean, I guess just the psychology around that is, you know, trying to change people doesn't work. It doesn't work, especially if it's trying to encourage or influence perhaps, or support or educate or empower, maybe. But the question is, does this person want this? Do they want my feedback? Do they want my direction? Do they want my support in this? Because maybe the one who wants them to change is you, not them. And if they don't want to change, so, you know, if you have a partner that's doing something that is, even if that thing is destructive, like let's say, for example, you have a partner that smokes and you go, I wish he or she wouldn't smoke. And so what you're doing is you're constantly giving them a hard time for smoking. You're constantly bringing up research and data or horrible pictures. You're constantly badgering them about something that you're doing. You are way more likely to create a negative response than a positive response. They know that smoking isn't good for them. They know that that's not a healthy habit. They know that, but nonetheless, they're, for that point in time, they're committed. And so, yeah, it's just about it. It's about timing, and it's about, you know, if you do want to help somebody change something, or you do want to have a conversation with them, have that conversation, right place, right time, right words, right energy. And how do we figure this out? Who knows? But just use your internal sat nav for this. But don't keep having that conversation. Don't keep pointing out to them what they're doing wrong. I did the exact same thing with my mum, bless her little socks, who 100 years ago, well, not actually, probably 20 years ago, smoked for many years. And it's in one of my books where I spoke about I literally fucking badgered her for 10 years, 20 years, maybe, to stop smoking. And every time I would bring it up, which became less and less over the years, but every time I would bring it up, all it would do would create tension between her and I, because she didn't want to give up.
Mm.
All it did was create a problem. All it did was create disconnection and resentment from her to me. But eventually, when she was ready, she gave up with zero help from me. So trying to change people is a bad idea. Being able to, you know, support them if they want, that's completely different.
Yeah.
Give them some feedback. Careful. Do they want the feedback? See, the thing is, even if you're 100% right and relevant and articulate if they don't want the feedback, then they're not getting it as feedback. Yeah. They're getting it as judgment, as criticism, as unwanted input from somebody that's fucking annoying.
Okay.
Last one, or maybe two more. Go, one more.
Next one, people pleasing.
It's nice to be nice, but it's not nice to be an emotional doormat. And I think one of the things that we all want to be loved and valued and needed, we all want to be connected, we all want to belong. And I think that one of the dangers in the middle of all of that wanting is that sometimes we can compromise our values and compromise our standards and even compromise ourselves in terms of our self-worth, where we are essentially trying to be what we think other people want rather than just being ourselves and saying, you know what, I'm going to identify my truth and my values and who I am and what I believe in, and I'm going to build my choices and my behavior and my life around those core principles and ideas and values, and then I'm going to see who sticks around. So people pleasing is, it's not, this is going to sound harsh, but sometimes people pleasing is weakness, not kindness.
Yeah.
You know, and it's you actually compromising you. You can be loving and kind and caring and compassionate and empathetic and generous and beautiful and at the same time fucking terrifying. You can. You can. Like, I'm a strong person. I've got a strong character, but I love people and I care about people, but I won't let anyone fuck me over. I've done it. I've done that. I won't let people be rude to me. I won't let people, you know what I'm like?
Yeah.
I've been in cafes where that somebody's serving me, they're literally rude. And I did this not long ago. I said to someone who was rude to me, are other people okay with you being rude? And he just looked at me and I go, I said, if you don't like serving people, you shouldn't be in customer service. Yeah. We don't need to be buddies, but it's not okay for you to be rude to me. I don't know if other people are okay with it. I'm not okay with it.
I could so imagine.
He fucking skulked off and he didn't come back, but somebody else came back who was much friendlier.
Funny that.
Yeah. It's not, and that's the thing. It's not about being, it's just about going, you know what, okay, so this person's being a prick to me. What do I do? Do I just go, oh, okay, well, treat me terribly. All right, then be rude to me. Okay. No, it's not okay. And it's okay for you or me to go, I'm not cool with your rudeness.
Yeah.
So either don't be rude or take your rudeness over there and get someone to me to serve me, because I'm here to be served because this is the situation, someone who wants to serve me with a smile and be friendly and genuine. If not, you know, I'll go somewhere. That, you just don't need that.
Yeah.
Just like if I did that, which I hope I never would, but if I was rude, like, put it this way, I would never knowingly be rude to somebody. But if somebody came up to me and went, you did this or said that and I found you rude, I would go, really sorry, didn't intend it, not my intention, this was my version, but I understand. You know, I just think you have to be, you know, you have to be that. Like, and of course I'm going to be offensive sometimes, and of course I'm going to be a dickhead, and of course, you know, but I just think that in that whole space of trying to keep everyone happy and be the eternal people pleaser, and one, it's exhausting, and two, all you're teaching people is that it's okay to use and abuse and manipulate me. Mm. And by abuse, I don't mean abuse. I just mean, you know, control me and boss me around.
Yeah. All right. Have we got time for one more?
Last one.
We're just sitting on an hour.
All right.
Last one. You can't master what you avoid.
We've spoken about that a bit, but that is a good one. So, you know, we talk about, you know, and you've probably heard me say this, but people often say to me, how do I get good at public speaking? I'm terrified. Or how do I overcome my fear of public speaking? I'm terrified. And the answer is by public speaking. You know, we can't get good at the thing that we're not doing. How do you, if you go, you know what, Craig, I really want to do what you're saying. I maybe want to get in front of groups and audiences and I want to develop, but I'm terrified, or da 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 da, or, you know, I have no skill, or I have no credibility, or I have no brand, or no one knows who I am. I'm like, cool. So put your video on, put your camera on, and film yourself doing a 10-minute talk into your camera. Then have a look at it, and it'll be fucking terrible, right? And that's okay. And then you go, well, I did this, was okay, that was shit, that was shit, that was shit, and this was all right, and that story was all right. Show someone else the video. Ask them for honest feedback. Oh, no, that's too painful. All right, get another goal then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So how do you get good? You get good at things by repeatedly exposing yourself to them, to, you know, putting yourself in the fire. That's how you mold, and that's how you get molded. That's how you get strong. That's how you build resilience. And, you know, how do you become a good leader? By just stepping into a role and trying and fucking up and being okay with it. How do you become a good athlete? By training hard, by not being fit at the start, by not being strong at the start, by not being skilled at the start. Like the starting point for public speaking, the starting point for building a business and brand, the starting point for doing a PhD, thankfully, the starting point, this is what I'm telling myself, the starting point for becoming good at anything is that you are not good at the beginning.
Yeah.
Ergo, the process of learning and growing and evolving. And, you know, it's the same with you know, having those conversations that are hard, the longer you avoid those conversations, the harder they become. Not literally, but experientially, yeah. Because now your anxiety is not a 1, it's an 11 out of 10. So, but as soon as we go, you know what, I've just got to have this conversation. Won't be fun, maybe, won't be easy, won't be comfortable, but I need to do this. Mm. And you have the conversation and they didn't die and you didn't die and you go, all right, well, that wasn't fun, but it was not as terrifying as I thought.
Yeah, often it's not as bad as you've been thinking.
Definitely. All right, well, that'll do us. So what I want to say, guys, is firstly, thank you for your continued support. Is this number 61?
It is.
Thank you for your continued support of the podcast. My plan is to continue, generally speaking, Sunday nights. This was a Monday. Tuesday, Thursdays with other guests. As I said, tomorrow night, Professor Sharon Ricardo will be in the studio, which is nice. And if you're thinking about opening the door on doing, you know, getting in front of some groups in whatever capacity, there's no perfect timing, there's no perfect situation. Don't wait for an opportunity to present itself. Don't wait for a door to open itself. Open the door yourself. Create the opportunity yourself. If you're going to do some presentations or workshops or seminars, start to plan. Start to build your content. Build your ideas. Build your philosophy. So if you bump into me and you go, Craig, I'm going to do some speaking. I'm going to go, cool. What are the 5 key things you want to share with people? And you can go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, just bang them out. Okay, what's your philosophy? Great, this is my overarching philosophy. Okay, tell me 1 or 2 great stories that relate to that. Fantastic. Now tell me why you're slightly different. Tell me your unique selling proposition and so on. And it's not that we need to be, you know, a superstar, but it's if we want to get good at something, we need to be strategic. We need to do our work. We need to understand the science of whatever that thing is that we're trying to do. We need to understand what other people are doing. Listen to people like me if you think I'm worth listening to. Take on board what I'm saying, but also don't necessarily believe it. Maybe take it for a test drive. Try some of the things I've spoken about, shared. And if they work, if they prove to be of value, then they can become perhaps part of your belief system and part of your operating system as well. Anything else I need to mention?
I think that's all.
Do you think I'm waffling?
I think that's a wrap.
All right. Chicken wrap. I wouldn't mind a chicken wrap. All right, team. Be awesome. See you tomorrow night.
See ya.